ಹಾರೇನ ಸಾರ್ವತಃ ಅನ್ವೇಷಮಾನಂ ಋಷಭಂ ಪ್ರೌಢಂ ಕಾಮರೂಪಿಣಿ. Pancham, five, Shirsham, heads, Ahinam, by a snake, Guptam, protected, Pratiharena, by a bodyguard, Sarvataha, all around, Anveshamanam, one who is searching after Rishabham, a husband, a Praudham, not very old, Kamarupini, very attractive to fulfill lusty desires. Translation in purport by Shri Prabhupada Ki. The woman was protected on all sides by a five-hooded snake. She was very beautiful and young, and she appeared very anxious to find a suitable husband. Please repeat. The woman was protected on all sides by a five-hooded snake. She was very beautiful and young, and she appeared very anxious to find a suitable husband. Purport. The vital force of a living entity includes the five kinds of air working within the body, which are known as prana, apana, vyana, samana, and udana. The vital force is compared to a serpent, because a serpent can live simply by drinking air. The vital force carried by the air is described as the pratihara, or the bodyguard. Without the vital force, one cannot live for a moment. Indeed, all the senses are working under the protection of the vital force. The woman who represents intelligence was searching after a husband. This indicates that intelligence cannot act without consciousness. A beautiful woman is useless unless protected by the proper husband. Intelligence must always be very fresh. Therefore, the word aprabdham, very young, is used here. Material enjoyment means utilizing the intelligence for the sake of rupa, rasa, gandha, shabda, and sparsha, or form, taste, smell, sound, and touch. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karuti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girin Yatripatamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataranam Paramananda Madhavam Shri Chaitanya Nishvaram. Shirshahinaguptam Pratiharena Sarvataha Amvishamanam Rishabham Aprabdham Kamarupinim. The woman was protected on all sides by a five-hooded snake. She was very beautiful and young, and she appeared very anxious to find a suitable husband. King Puranjana, King Pratina Barhishat, was not ready to hear direct preaching. If Narada Muni would come and tell, look, this is your situation, this is your activities, and all this is nonsense, then King Pratina Barhishat would not be ready to take it. So Narada Muni is telling a very instructive allegory or a story about King Puranjana. And King Puranjana is no other than King Pratina Barhishat. They are in the same situation. And all of us are also in the same situation. We are all Puranjanas living in the city of the nine gates. So that's the allegory being presented. It's very instructive. It has so many details about the situation of the soul encaged in a material body. And by understanding that, we can actually get the proper vision of what is our situation in this world. So we have so far been hearing about how the soul, after going around everywhere in the universe, finally found a place which appeared very suitable. That was a city of nine gates, and it was located on the south of the Himalayas. So that indicates finally the soul came to get a human body and take birth in Bharatavarsha. So that's a very special situation. And in that place he found the woman who is material intelligence. And now this verse is describing that the woman was protected on all sides by a five-hooded snake. So in this chapter, Narada Muni is not yet disclosing who is who. He's only telling the story. It's only the allegory. But later on in chapter 29, it is going to be described. He's going to unfold all the meanings behind the different people in the allegory. So Prabhupada tells us that the woman who is material intelligence is being protected on all sides by the five-hooded snake, which is life air, prana. Okay, so an intelligence, that material intelligence will attract the soul, and the soul identified with the material intelligence will live in the body, which is the city of nine gates. So she will invite Puranjana. Now Puranjana, the king is going to ask, who are you? Where are you coming from? And she doesn't know. She's in complete ignorance. She doesn't know from where she's coming from. Or she only knows I'm here, and I'm surrounded by all these servants, and I'm protected by this snake. So you just accept me as your wife, and you can live happily for 100 years in the city of nine gates. So that's the materialistic intelligence. We don't know who we are, we don't know where we came from. Only the intelligence is telling us, anyway, we are here in this city. No, all these servants are here, the eyes, the different senses are there, with different desires, which are the wives of the senses. And let's just enjoy the city of the body for 100 years. That's the proposal of the material intelligence. So specifically in this verse, the prana is there as a five-hooded snake protecting that woman. So Prabhupada explains in the purport, the vital force of a living entity includes the five kinds of air working within the body, which are known as prana, apana, dhyana, samana, and udana. Okay, so what is that prana? It is the life force of the living entity, which makes the interface between the gross body and the subtle body. It's like an interface, it's like you have a computer. The person using the computer is the soul. And the computer itself, the machine, is the material body, is the city of nine gates. The material intelligence is the software. And the power which enables that to work is the prana. Unless you have the current either connected to the plug or from the battery, then the body cannot work. Right? So in the same way, the material body is the city, the soul is inside, and to interact with that, there is the intelligence, the material intelligence and subtle body, which is controlling the senses, and then it has to be powered by the prana. So either you have to be breathing, which is like your blood, or you have to be holding your breath, which is like your battery. It will last for some time, but not very long. Okay, so the prana is like that. Is the vital force. And prana is just one. It's one. There is one prana, but according to its functions, it is called by different names. So for example, Prabhupada is saying here that prana is known as prana, apana, vyana, udana, and samana. Right? So the first one, prana, is the air which you inhale. You absorb that energy, vital energy, that vital force by inhaling. Okay? So that air comes inside the lungs, and then that energy is distributed in the body by the blood. So that is prana, is the first one. It's absorbing that energy. Okay? Then, so the whole system of inhaling and distributing the energy through the blood to the different cells, all that is prana. Then there is exhaling, and there is also evacuating the expression, eliminating system, all that is apana. It's the second type of air. So one is absorbing, one is expelling, expressing, eliminating. No, either by the same air that came inside bringing energy, it will come out after being processed, it will bring all the carbon dioxide from the cells and to be expelled. And also the impurities from the body will be expelled through the urine and like that. No? So all this is apana. Then we have udana is the power to speech, to express ourselves, to cry, to laugh, to produce sound. That's the udana. So then we have the samana, which is the digestive system, the capacity to digest food, and also the capacity to produce heat in the body. So that's the samana. And then there is vyana, which is the air which pervades the entire body and makes the movements of extending and contracting the limbs like that. No? So that's the vyana. Contracting, expanding, and so these five functions of prana, they are described here in the allegory as the five-hooded serpent. And there are five more subtle functions of prana also, which are described in the Vedic literature. The prana that makes the eyes open, etc., etc. So this is more subtle aspects of prana. So Prabhupada continues in the purport. Oh, there is more to say about prana. Prana is the vital force, but it's not the soul. subtle material energy produced from Rajaguna. It is created in the process of Sarga, in the beginning of the universe. So it's not eternal like the soul. It is created by the Lord and is not a soul. There are different layers that cover the soul. So the gross layer, external layer, is the Annamaya Kosha. It's the body, gross body made of material ingredients. We eat food and that creates a body of gross ingredients. That is the Annamaya Kosha. Okay, then subtler than that is the Pranamaya Kosha. That's the life air that we're speaking about here. Then, even more subtle is the Manomaya Kosha, the subtle body. Then beyond that is the Vijnanamaya, which is the living entity. And finally, there is the Anandamaya, which is the super soul. So it's like that. It's like the one inside the other. So the soul is inside everything. The super soul is inside even the soul. So the soul is inside, the soul is floating in the heart, inside the prana. And the prana is inside the subtle body, energizing it, and the subtle body is inside the gross body. Okay, so these are the five layers. So, because the prana is energizing the body and making the senses act, so it is the source that animates the body. From that comes the word anima. Anima in Latin and also in Italian means the soul. And in many languages like Spanish and Portuguese, alma also comes from that, means the soul. So sometimes there is a confusion. It's not clear. Those who don't know that there is something more subtle than that think that this is the soul, but it's not. The prana is the second layer. So it is very subtle. It's the interface that permits the subtle body to connect with the senses. So I want to move my hands, I want to move my arms, I want to open my eyes. So the soul wants that. The subtle body, the mind desires. So how is the mind going to make the body work? It's through the pranas. So it's the interface between the subtle and gross body. But it's not the soul. In the Vedic literature you get that very clear. In the Bhagavatam it's explained, and also in the Vedanta Sutra it's explained, and also in the Upanishads there's a verse saying that the soul is floating in the five airs, five pranas, and the soul is different from them. Okay, so this is the position of the soul in the relationship with the life air. Then Prabhupada continues in the purport, saying that the vital force carried by the air is described as the pratihara, or the bodyguard. Without the vital force, one cannot live for a moment. Indeed, all the senses are working under the protection of the vital force. So, to illustrate this, the Upanishads, they describe, there's a story in which all the senses were discussing who is more important. So the sense of hearing decided, okay, I'm going to leave the body. And the sense of hearing left the body for 1 year. And he stayed outside. Then he came back and saw, okay, so how is it, huh? To stay 1 year without being able to hear. So it's not very good. But still the body was alive. Similarly, the sense of sight went out for some time and then came back. So how was that, no? It was not very nice to be unable to see. And like that, each one of the senses was going out for some time and then coming back. Finally, the prana said, okay, so now it's my turn to come to go out. But as soon as the prana was getting ready to leave, all the other senses said, no, stop. Because without you, we cannot exist. So that proves that the prana is different from the senses and is more important than the senses. So what Prabhupada is saying here is that without life force, one cannot live for a moment. And also Prabhupada says that all the senses are working under the protection of the vital force. So, even while you sleep, the body is being maintained by the prana. That prana is never sleeping, it's always awake, that serpent is always there protecting the body for 100 years. So that's the promise that the material intelligence will do to Puranjana. She says, no, you marry me and we can live 100 years happily in the city of nine gates. So that prana is there, and the prana is always protecting. Whenever there is some attack from disease, from any other danger, the prana is there, the life force is there protecting the body, even while we sleep. So we continue to breathe while we sleep, even though everything is inert. The mind, the intelligence, the sense organs, they're all inert. But the prana is still there, the body is still breathing, and in the vital functions are preserved by that prana, that serpent, which remains there for 100 years protecting. The problem is that after that 100 years, the prana starts getting weak. And then it cannot protect the body anymore from different attacks from the soldiers of time. And then different diseases start entering the body and the life air is not able to counteract them. Finally, that prana, that snake, is bound, is arrested by the soldiers of Chandavega, which is time. So the soldiers, they arrest the prana, the life air, and they take him away of the city of nine gates, along with King Puranjana and his entourage. So the soul, along with the subtle body, which is mind, intelligence, false ego, has to go out of the body with the life air after the period of life expires, after 100 years approximately in human life. So that's the analogy being given here. Prabhupada continues, the woman who represents intelligence was searching after her husband. This indicates that intelligence cannot act without consciousness. So material consciousness combined with material intelligence, and then what they do? They go after enjoyment from Rupa, Rasa, Gandha, Shabda, and Sparsha. In other words, the soul in a material, conditioned by the material intelligence, is after enjoyment through the five sense objects. Trying to enjoy beautiful objects, trying to enjoy nice aroma, trying to enjoy nice taste, like that. So this material life is the soul, which even though it's spiritual, now he's under the conditioning of the material intelligence. Just like Puranjana, after marriage, he was only following his wife. His wife was sleeping, he was sleeping. His wife was awake, he was awake. She was eating, he was eating. And like that, whatever the material intelligence would desire to do, Puranjana would go into that. So that's the soul under the influence of material intelligence. And she's Kama Rupini. She's ready to fulfill all material desires, no? She's very attractive to fulfill lusty desires. But then, the whole process of spiritual life, self-realization, consists in switch from that material consciousness or material intelligence to spiritual intelligence. So, we can do that through different processes. The yogis, they try to control the life air, to pranayama. That's a very deep science, a very subtle science. So they control the life air, and like that they try to raise the life air from the lower chakras to the higher chakras, up to the point of the head, and then to live with the prana, live from the top of the head. So it's a very complicated, subtle, difficult process that the yogis perform in previous ages. But in this age, it's very difficult to achieve success through that. So, anyway, so that's one system of controlling the prana. Because the prana is regulating all the activities of the body. And if the flow of prana is not properly going on, then it results in disturbances of all types. Physical disturbances, disease, mental illness, etc. So Ayurveda, through different herbs, for example, tries to balance that prana. And also through pranayama. And Chinese medicine also Wordsworth prana. So the whole system of acupuncture is based on the knowledge of prana, because prana, that life air, is flowing inside the body through different channels called nadis, very subtle, 72,000 subtle channels through which the prana is flowing in the body. And when it's flowing properly, then the body is working properly. When it's not flowing properly, then there is disease, there is mental illness, there are so many problems, disturbance in the body. So through acupuncture, Chinese medicine tries to balance the prana again, to unblock the prana and make it flow properly in the body. Like that, even martial arts, they work with prana. And like that, we have so many ways to try to control the prana. But actually, in the ultimate instance, who is the controller of prana? Who is the Praneshvara or Pranana? That's Krishna. Krishna is the one who can control prana. That's also described in the Bhagavatam, in the Vedanta Sutra, that actually Krishna is the ultimate controller of prana inside the body. He, situated as the super soul in the heart, is the one who has the power to control the prana. That's his energy. But then, the living entity, he has desires, and because of his desires, the Lord allows him to partially control the prana, and also the demigods, they also partially control the prana. So all of them, the Lord, the living entity, and the demigods, they all interact in that. But ultimately, Krishna is the one who gives permission, who controls the prana. He gives partial power to the limited power to the living entity and the demigods to control that prana to some extent according to his will or according to his to give the permission. According to his permission, the living entities and the demigods, they also can control that prana. So even though it's very complicated science to know how to control the prana in the body through anything, acupuncture, acupressure, herbs, Ayurveda, exercise, asanas, whatever, pranayama, it's all very complicated. But if we somehow or another take shelter of Krishna, then Krishna can easily control the prana. So actually Prabhupada, in one purport, he explains about that. In the section of Prithu Maharaj, so Prithu Maharaj is also practicing pranayama because he lived in Satyayuga, and in that time the proper system for self-realization was Ashtanga Yoga, meditation. So he was practicing that. But even though in the shloka Srimad Bhagavatam 4.23.8, so the word pranayama is used, Prabhupada explains that, no? Prabhupada says, the word pranayama is very important in this verse, because the Hatha Yogis and Ashtanga Yogis practice pranayama, but generally they do not know the purpose behind it. The purpose of pranayama or mystic yoga is to stop the mind and senses from engaging in fruitive activities. So that's the whole process of yoga. The whole process of pranayama is meant to help us to control the mind. So generally, nowadays, people forget that. The Prabhupada continues. So-called yogis who practice in Western countries have no idea of this. The aim of pranayama is not to make the body strong and fit for working hard. The aim is to worship Krishna. Okay? So then Prabhupada continues. In order to save such yogis from wandering throughout the different species of life, the Shastras warn that in this age, such yogic practice is simply a waste of time. The only means of elevation is the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. So then Prabhupada says an amazing sentence. As far as pranayama is concerned, chanting of the holy name of the Lord and dancing in ecstasy are also considered pranayama. So for us, chanting Hare Krishna and dancing in ecstasy, that's our pranayama. So, do we practice pranayama? Yes. By Sankirtana Yajna, that's our pranayama. In the present age, this determination can be very easily acquired. Sorry. Here the word pranayama does not refer to any ulterior motive. The actual aim is to strengthen the mind and senses in order to engage them in devotional service. In the present age, this determination can be very easily acquired simply by chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, this is the best way to control the pranas and to please and achieve the favor of Praneshvara, Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay, so I'll stop here. If anyone has questions, comments on this topic, no? Please.
Thank you very much for the wonderful class today. Guruji, I had a question. Like you were mentioning that in Satya Yoga, the Ashtanga Yoga process is the system, method that was prescribed for self-realization. But as we say self-realization, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, these are the original activities of the soul. This is the natural for the soul. So that is prescribed for age of Kali, especially Sankirtan. So that looks very logical and the most fastest way. So this is prescribed even for age of Kali, whom people are not very much favorable, you know, they are not very much receptive. So why not the same most direct process is prescribed for the most favorable age, that is the Satya Yuga, where people are so receptive to accept the direct thing also. Why to go for the indirect method of Ashtanga Yoga and things like that? Why not the activities of the soul directly?
Okay, so the question, let me try to summarize the question. So the natural process of devotional service is actually our constitutional position in the spiritual world, to glorify Krishna, to serve Krishna in different ways. That's natural. It's our constitutional position. So this is easy. Being natural, automatically it is easy. So why in previous ages the same process is not prescribed? Why do they have to give a different process? That's a good question. The first thing I can say is that it's the causeless mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that we have this process in Kali Yuga. If we had to follow previous processes, then practically self-realization would be an impossible task. So somehow or another, the Lord, He arranges that there is always a way out of the material world. Because the material world is created with a double purpose. First of all, we want to enjoy separated from Krishna. So Krishna has to create this world so that we can try to fulfill that desire. But from His side, Krishna wants to bring us back home. So therefore, He creates the world in such a way that it allows us to forget Krishna for a while and then try to enjoy separately. At the same time, it's made in such a way that we can never feel comfortable enough and we can never remain here. It's always, there is always some urge to going back home, back to Godhead. And there is always a process to do that. It's just like a hospital. If you go to a hospital, it has to have doctors, it has to have medicines, and there must be a way by which people can get cured and go out. Otherwise, there's no meaning for a hospital. So when Krishna creates the material world, He makes sure that there is always a process and always there are doctors, like devotees who are coming, either his servants or either His expansions in the form of different avatars or great sages or demigods, anything, manus, and they have the function of somehow or another making sure that there is a path open for the living entities to be out, to go out from the material world. So in Kali Yuga, there is no other process. It's very difficult for the soul. They are living great ignorance. So Krishna has to come and He has to keep a process. In every age, there is a process by which you can go back to Godhead. And always there are sages and devotees and demigods and manus who are making sure that the process is being propagated in the world. So, like that, no? It has to be like that. But why can't it be easier also in previous ages? I don't know. No, it could be always the same process. Maybe it could. Maybe it would be too simple for the Satya Yuga people. And when something is too simple, you don't feel like doing it. So that could be one answer, but I don't know, anyone has more insights on why the same direct process couldn't be practicing all, just be the yoga for all, the dharma for all the yogas? Any further insight on that?
And process from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a concession. It's not a normal thing. You have your normal religious processes,
yes,
in the different. So he's Tri-Yogi. He comes in Tri-Yogi. Generally, doesn't. This is. But in Kali Yuga, there's certainly no religious process to escape. The avatar doesn't come generally in Kali Yuga. So when Mahaprabhu comes on that 28th day of Lord Brahma, it's a special concession. There's no hope for these people. Normally there's no hope. So therefore he gives a concession.
Okay, thank you very much. So it's actually not the ordinary or the official path back to Godhead. The official path is the Vedic path. But in this age, nobody can follow that. So there's a special arrangement by the Lord. Otherwise, no, there's no hope. Okay? Any other questions? Yes?
Krishna. You were saying that that vital force is also one of the elements which is there in the body, but it
vital
is
force.
It is also one of the elements which is there in our body.
It's also inside the body itself.
Like there are 24 elements which were there in our body. Like as per in Bhagavad Gita, it is said Nanda Parbat that this body is made of 24 elements. Like there are the gross elements, subtle elements. All put there are 24 elements, and this force which you are saying. Like where it fits in this 24 elements.
Okay, so where does the vital force fit inside the body? The body is made of Bhumirapunano Vayu Kamano Bhutireva Chahankara. These 8 ingredients. So where is the prana? Prana is air, but it's one special type of air. So Vayu is there, is air, but the prana is a special type of air. That much I could understand from the scriptures. More than that, I don't know. But it's, yeah, into these 8 divisions, that's prana is air. Okay?
Hare Krishna Puji. Thank you for the wonderful class. Actually, I want to know that when the soul comes, soul enters the mother's womb, that time it is not breathing, it's not having prana. Means what is that exact stage? Means like when the soul enters the womb of mother,
okay,
that time it is not breathing. It's not.
Yeah, but through the mother is breathing. So from the mother the prana is coming and going to the child also. And so the child is receiving that vital energy from the mother through the umbilical cord. And also, the apana functions also coming out of the child through the umbilical cord. Also, all the expressions from the child go in the mother. So through the mother is just a filter. She's getting the air inside. She's getting the air outside. She's getting the nourishment, the nutrients inside, and also the excrements are going outside, all through the via medium of the mother. But it's going on. Any other questions?
Krishna. So you are saying that actually the controller of prana is prana, is Krishna, and the yogis, they take out their vital force at the end of their life, like from the tip top of their head. So how they control, how they came in control of the vital force, how this happens, and if they are knowing that you know, Paramatma is the actual controller. So at, then why they are thinking of merging?
Yes, okay, so good question. That the yogis are controlling, they think they are controlling the prana, but the actual controller is the Lord. So how do they manage to raise the prana through the different chakras and finally leave the body through the top chakra? So how do they do that? So actually Krishna is the one doing, but if you can surrender to Krishna directly, then you're a bhakta. If you cannot surrender to Krishna directly, then you go through the indirect process of yoga. And the yoga letter is there. If you take shelter of work, you're a karmi. If you take shelter of your intelligence, your intellect, you're a jnani. If you see that intellect is not enough to self-realization, then you take shelter of meditation, pranayama, and ashtanga yoga, then you're a yogi. And in that process of yoga, one, in the whole process of the yoga ladder, or the gradual progression of yoga, the whole thing is about bringing one somehow, gradually, through different steps, up to the point of surrendering to Krishna. So, but in the stage of Ashtanga yoga, one is not surrendered enough. He thinks that for me to get self-realization, I have to control my prana, I have to control my asanas, I have to do this and that, no? So that's their faith, their level of faith. They have faith that only if I can control my sitting postures, if I control my breathing, this and that, then I can achieve self-realization. So Krishna gives them the intelligence how to do that, how to raise the prana from the Muladhara chakra to the next chakra, to the next chakra, to the next. Krishna is giving the intelligence as the super soul. And they are thinking, I am doing it. So they are doing, but Krishna is gradually giving them the power to do it, the intelligence how to do it. So in the Vedanta Sutra it's explained like that the soul and the demigods, they also can control the prana as much as the super soul allows. So when the super soul is satisfied with a yogi, you teach him, okay, do like this, and then he can rise the prana a little bit. And then he'll teach a little bit more. And gradually they can raise the prana. They think, oh, I'm doing it. Just like a small child, he wants to lift the table. Suppose not this small Chinese boy here, he decides to lift the table here. He's too small. He probably cannot even move the table. Right? But then, if from behind I lift the table, you can see him. He can look at his mom and say, hey mom, I'm lifting the table all by myself. But you can see that he actually is not, he's only trying to lift, and someone is helping from behind. So the yogi is trying, he wants to control the prana. The Lord sees that. Like a benevolent father, he says, okay, my son, no, you want to lift the prana, okay, I help you a little bit. And then he lifts a little bit. And then the yogi is trying again, then he lifts a little bit more. And like that, he has the impression that he's controlling. Because the conditioned soul, he is averse to the idea of surrendering. So the Lord allows those who are too averse to the process of surrendering to somehow, they feel that I am in control. So if he thinks that I am controlling through karma, he's a karmi. Oh, I am rich because I am working so hard, I am very intelligent, so therefore I make advancement. So like that, different levels of surrender, different levels of illusion that I am the controller through my work or through my intelligence or through my yogic process. But finally one has to come to the process, to the point of bhakti. He has to surrender to Krishna. So even those who go indirectly, finally the yogi will, the super soul will finally reveal to him, and then when the yogi surrenders to the super soul, then he can achieve perfection. So the process of indirectly going through the yoga ladder also culminates in bhakti, and also leads on to surrender to the Lord and go back home, back to God. If someone doesn't understand that and gets stuck in some level, then he may stay for many lifetimes as a karmi, or as a jnani, as a yogi, or he may just try to merge into the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, and then after some time he falls down from the Brahma Jyoti and starts again. But until he comes to the point of actually surrendering to the Lord, and that's bhakti, then he cannot go back to God. Is that okay?
So, I have one more question. There are three transcendentalists, the bhaktas, the jnanis, and the yogis. So all the transcendentalists, they are in the mode of goodness or above the mode of goodness. The devotees are above the mode of goodness in Suddha Satoguna. So if the yogis are in the mode of goodness, and Krishna in Chaturshokli Bhagavatam, he explains to Brahmaji that if something you are not able to have a relationship with me, that is illusion. So here the yogis, they are not able to understand that actually Paramatma is helping me out. So they are in illusion. So is that they are in illusion or they are in goodness? How to understand this book?
They are in illusion. But they are in the mode of passion. Then someone who is practicing Nishkama Karma Yoga, that passion has also an element of goodness in it. Then the jnanis, they are more in goodness than the karmis. And the yogis are even more in goodness, but it's all material goodness. Only bhakti is nirguna. So like that, it's material goodness means the goodness is not pure. There is still a mixture of passion and ignorance. That means when you say goodness, in the material sense, means it has a mixture of passion and ignorance. When you say Vishuddha Sattva, means sattva or goodness which is not mixed with any tinge of passion and ignorance, that is spiritual. So material always has. So the karmis, jnanis and yogis, they may have goodness to some extent, higher and higher extents, but it's not pure goodness. Only bhakti is pure goodness. Okay? Is that the answer you are looking for?
My question was that they are in illusion. So why we are saying that, you know, this transcendentalist as a yogi, he is in mode of goodness. If they are not able to understand that Paramatma is behind, so that is illusion.
Material goodness also brings one into illusion, as the Bhagavad Gita explains. And how it brings one into illusion? By creating a sense of well-being and a sense of superiority. Like that, one becomes bound by illusion through the mode of goodness. So material goodness creates illusion. Only spiritual goodness is free from illusion. So that's Bhagavad Gita. Okay? So it's material goodness. Only bhakti is beyond. So that's Krishna says, Traigunya Vishaya Vedan, Nistraigunya Bhava, Arjuna. You should become beyond the three gunas, beyond the three, because all these processes, they are mixed with the three modes. Okay? So only bhakti. Krishna is saying you have to practice bhakti. Everything else is mixed. Any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you very much. Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.